Joe Donnelly backs the wall. Ball State backs Papa John. That plus national anti-abortion groups pressure Donnelly and more on Indiana Week in Review for the week ending August 10th, 2018.
Ice Miller is proud to support Indiana Week in Review. Ice Miller, with a 100-year tradition of learning what is important to clients and strategizing with them toward a common goal. Today, Ice Miller continues its commitment to help clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com.
This week, Democratic Senator Joe Donnelly said he'd back more money to fund President Trump's proposed border wall in order to stave off a government shutdown. The Senate Appropriations Committee is prepared to set aside about $1.5 billion to help fund President Trump's wall on the southern border, a key campaign promise. President Trump, who wants more money, has threatened to shut down the government unless Congress delivers it. Senator Donnelly says the government has to stay open, and he tells Politico he's prepared to support up to $5 billion for the wall to make that happen. That comes as an outside group launched ads this week attacking Donnelly on border security. Will Donnelly's support for increased border wall funding help his reelection bid? It's the first question for our Indiana Week in Review panel. Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Jennifer Hollowell, John Schwannis, the host of Indiana Lawmakers, and Fort Wayne Journal-Gazette State House reporter Nikki Kelly. I'm Indiana Public Broadcasting State House reporter Brandon Smith. Jennifer Hollowell, is this just Donnelly representing Hoosiers or trying to win that election?
I would say that this is a great example that his campaign is in real trouble. The bottom line is he has to vote for the border wall, no matter how much he opposes it or how much Democrats oppose it. If he doesn't vote to fund the wall, he has no chance of being reelected. And it's one of these situations where it's less than 3 months until the election, and so we're going to see him take a couple of votes that he doesn't want to take because he knows he has zero chance if he doesn't take them.
Whether or not you think Donald Trump is still as popular as he was when he won Indiana by 19 points. Mm-hmm. The border wall is maybe the biggest campaign promise he made. So,
well,
in Indiana,
that and the infrastructure bill, which we haven't seen yet either.
Well, but,
you know, there were two big things he has not delivered
on. Yes, but this
on.
Is one that they're going to take a vote on.
You know, Joe Donnelly has, by the way, talked about compromising on the border wall for a long time, not 3 months before the election, because what he's saying is, I'll give a little on this if we can actually do something about the Dreamers and the immigration status of people who want to get in here legitimately. And it's just another example of his bipartisanship. He's willing to compromise to get something done for Hoosiers. And, you know, Donald Trump wants a wall. Everybody knows the wall is not going to work, but he wants to deliver on it because it's a campaign promise. You know, in Indiana, we call them sprinkles, and out in Washington, they call them earmarks. This is Donald Trump's earmark. Okay, he wants $5 billion, so he can say he delivered on a campaign promise that isn't going to be effective in dealing with the immigration problem that we have in this country. And the irony of it is that, you know, people elected Republicans because they're fiscally conservative. We are exploding the deficit, exploding it. $1 trillion added to the deficit, and now he wants $5 billion more for something that everybody who looks at this problem says will not work.
If Joe Donnelly keeps, Joe, there are a few more votes like this that are probably tough for any Democrat who's in a reelection bid like Donnelly's this year. We've talked about this before, this question, but is this another one where Joe Donnelly is risking making his base angry to maybe get some Republican votes?
Well, that's his position in this state. He as a moderate Democrat, he faces that on pretty much everything in a conservative state of Indiana. He has voted for this issue before earlier
right.
this year,
yep.
So it's not his first vote for Trump's immigration bill. I was a little more concerned at the whole, give him $2 billion, $3 billion, $4 billion, $5 billion, whatever. This is money we don't have, and it's just being talked about like it's pennies.
With him, it's a rounding error.
Do you think this is a If this is a vote Joe Donnelly feels like he has to make, let me ask it this way. Part of this argument he's making, Joe Donnelly, is, well, we need to avoid a government shutdown at whatever cost. Is that a good enough reason to $2 billion, $3 billion, $4 billion, $5 billion, whatever it ends up being?
Well, we've seen that government shutdowns are sort of the 21st century equivalent of the third rail. It used to be Social Security you didn't touch or risk great danger to your political career. Now I don't think you want to shut down. We've seen what happened. Newt Gingrich probably still bears the scars of the showdown he had on that issue. I don't think the American public is very forgiving when they can't get basic services, when they can't get calls answered about their Social Security questions, or they can't get into their national parks for their long planned vacations. So I think that's a fine position for him politically and strategically. Because of the popularity of the wall and where he's been on this issue before, I think it's a pretty simple one. I think some of the other votes he's going to have to take are a little more ticklish, perhaps, than this one. But I will say that I think because of the way this election's unfolding, and to a large extent it being so much more than just about candidate A versus candidate B, this is about control of the U.S. Senate. This is about sending a message, perhaps, to Donald Trump and his administration about the direction the country is moving in. So I think his base, Joe Donnelly's base, is in this current climate willing to give him much more latitude or leeway than he might normally have.
I guess we'll find out. Online pressure built this week for Ball State trustees to reverse their decision to keep the name of John Schnatter, also known as Papa John, on a campus institute. News broke last month that Schnatter used the N-word in a corporate conference call. The Papa John's founder says he used it as an example of improper conduct. And that's why Ball State trustees say they chose to keep Schnatter's name on the university's Institute for Entrepreneurship and Free Enterprise. That's even as other universities, including Purdue, strip Schnatter's name from their campuses. At least one online petition this week gathered more than 2,000 signatures to urge the trustees to reverse their decision. And Delaney, is this a risky move by Ball State?
Well, you have to wonder what they were thinking. I mean, Purdue not only took the name off, but refunded the money. And, what he said, it's hard to characterize it as anything other than racist. And the problem is that the PR firm that was doing that training that he participated in backed out, gave up representing Papa John's, and he's having some trouble with his board already, as I understand it. So, I mean, I don't know how much money is involved for Ball State, but obviously it makes a lot more difference numerically.
$3.25 million.
Well, I think it was $8 million at Purdue.
Well, Purdue. So that's not only does Ball State have other universities to compare to on this decision, but one just in their own state. Purdue trustees came together and very quickly and quietly said, nope, we're taking the name off and we're giving back the money. Does that make Ball State look worse in this case?
Look, I think this is a really, really, obviously a really hard decision that they made. And based on what they've said, all of the thought that they, put into it. So, I mean, it is easy to make the decision to just rip the name off of everything. And obviously that's happening a lot lately. And, what he said was wrong. I don't think anyone would dispute that. He's been a big, important part of the Ball State family for a long time. And I think they have a different understanding of him and want to try to use this as a way to take an approach at thoughtful discussions about racism and race relations and their commitment to diversity and inclusion. I mean, that's not going to be an easy case to make, but yeah. That's what they're trying to do.
One thing they could do is invite him back to campus for a forum.
And they may
an opportunity.
Although the question is,
he could give him an opportunity to apologize and say what he said was wrong, and he regrets it. And at least it would give help Ball State with the decision they made.
They may well do that.
Yeah. How much of this is maybe Ball State too hoping that this eventually dies down and is largely forgotten?
I'm sure there is an element of that. I mean, this is a complicated issue, as has been said. I think all of us who find that word and racism repugnant would want to see swift action, forceful action. But keep in mind there are several other factors here. Money certainly is a factor, and it's not just, we're sitting there with $3.25 million. That money's already been invested in salaries and in equipment.
Yeah, the
and
Purdue
in
decision was more recent. The Purdue naming decision
right,
was more
right.
recent.
Right, right. So they might not have cashed the check yet, so to speak. But there is infrastructure already in place, human infrastructure and otherwise. And that research potentially would wither. So that's a factor. The other thing, I think you have some people in the university setting where you're ostensibly the most free-flowing, sometimes raucous exchange of ideas.
We're going to get to the First Amendment
Maybe. But do you get, if in fact, and this is maybe a different animal, but if it's simply the petition, a number of names on a petition that wants to see a name taken off a building, who's to say that there were people offended by what Alfred Kinsey did with human sexuality research? I think we need to take the name off the building. Where do you say, you know, academic freedom and free speech is protected no matter what, or we're going to sort of pick and choose our causes as we go? Again, let me stipulate up front, it's reprehensible.
In the argument of this eventually dies down and Ball State probably rides it out, is that helped by how many people knew Papa John's name was John Schenck? How many people knew who the heck this guy was?
I think it does help them, because I think if you ask 10 people out on the street, they would have no idea what Papa John's last name is. They would have no idea he had his name on two university buildings in this state. Unfortunately for Ball State, their decision came right on the same day that Purdue made the opposite decision. It was a very, you know, easy thing to compare and contrast. And to be fair, we don't know with those monies. I mean, I know Purdue said, look, we can offer to refund this, but we have no idea. Sometimes those naming rights come with that money. So
yeah,
it might just be something Ball State can't do right now. Yeah.
And if you have a reputation of giving money back, what does that do to your efforts to garner similar sorts of contributions in the future? We'll take your money, but we have our fingers crossed behind our back that as long as you're in our good graces, we'll keep your name up, but then bring out
the crime. Which is why you don't name things after people that are still alive.
Well, time now for viewer feedback. Each week we pose an unscientific online poll question in conjunction with our Ice Miller email and text alerts. This week's question, should Ball State remove Papa John's founder John Schnatter's name from its campus? A, yes, or B, no. Last week's question, will Governor Holcomb's support for a hate crimes bill be the push it needs to finally pass? 36% say yes, 29% say no, 35% say, well, it's still a few months to the General Assembly. If you would like to take part in the poll, go to wfyi.org/IWIR and look for the poll. Anti-abortion groups this week sought to put pressure on Senator Joe Donnelly to vote for President Trump's Supreme Court nominee, Brett Kavanaugh. There's a door-to-door campaign effort in Indiana by national anti-abortion group the Susan B. Anthony List. The group says its message is simple. Indiana is an anti-abortion state. The organization cites a recent poll it commissioned, which suggests more than half of Hoosiers want Donnelly to vote to confirm Kavanaugh. But a recent nonpartisan poll shows 43% of Hoosiers oppose an abortion ban, while 41% support one. Donnelly won't say whether he wants Roe v. Wade overturned. He says only that he doesn't have a litmus test for the Supreme Court. Person. John Schwannis, Donnelly calls himself a pro-life Hoosier. So how does... We've talked a lot about his vote on this nominee before, but from this particular angle, from these particular groups, how much does this sort of pressure weigh on his decision?
If it were the only voice we were hearing on this issue, it might weigh to a certain extent, but keep in mind that you have other organizations with similarly deep pockets who are going to be airing messages in these key states where Democrats may face close calls at the ballot box and may be inclined, therefore, to support nominee Kavanaugh. So you'll see pressure in terms of stirring public sentiment on both sides. That's one factor. The other factor is I do think the senator has a legitimate record here. Again, it's not a Johnny-come-lately or a Joe-come-lately in this case to the issue. He's voted against any number of funding measures that would provide... For the most part, I mean, there have been some exceptions to the rule,
but he's supported his votes on.
Yeah, but he's also supported
issues.
A ban over after 20 weeks.
Sure.
He's not necessarily in the good graces, for instance, of
Planned
Parenthood and other pro-choice activists. I think they would say he's not necessarily always in their camp.
If you're Joe Donnelly, though, these sorts of groups, Susan B. Anthony List, Right to Life, etc. You're not getting their endorsement no matter how you vote on Brett Kavanaugh. So does it matter that much what they say you should do or not do?
I think it always matters a bit. I mean, these groups can run ads. We're going to see the NRA coming out to do some similar kind of pressures. I mean, because there's more than abortion, you know, at issue in this race. And, you know, they're focusing on one little issue, but, you know, Mr. Kavanaugh can have an effect on immigration, on executive power, on gun rights, on religious freedom. And so when you lump those all together, that's going to be a hard vote for him to not confirm him.
Oh, I don't think so. I mean, I think the biggest worry I would have about Kavanaugh, notwithstanding all the other objections I have to him, is the fact that he was perfectly willing to impeach Bill Clinton, okay? Perfectly willing and eager to do that. Now he's had an epiphany, and all of a sudden the president can't even be sued while he's in office. He can't be deposed while he's in office. In the middle of the Mueller investigation, I think that is a showstopper for Kavanaugh.
Well, that's certainly what the Democratic caucus is focusing on. I think that's much more palatable to
Well, it's
all
legitimate concern.
And Delaney has talked on the show just now and before about how she doesn't think Donnelly should vote for Kavanaugh. If he doesn't, is that a death blow to his campaign?
Absolutely. He will vote to confirm Kavanaugh. There's no other option. Like, this is like the funding the wall option. He cannot get reelected if he doesn't do that. It's already hard enough. And so he has no choice. It is a political decision.
Let me ask this, though. He's one of 49 Democrats. There are 51 Republicans in the U.S. Senate. In a sense, why does it matter what a Democrat
Why does it matter how
a Democrat's going to vote?
So, number one, it's, again, going to be just a couple of months before the election, right? Incredibly important. So the memory is going to stick with voters of what happens. And the problem is he only votes with the majority of Hoosiers 15% of the time. Hoosiers voted for Trump over Clinton by
almost
20 points.
They didn't vote for Kavanaugh. They don't even know Kavanaugh.
And he has to support that agenda, especially in this window.
He does not.
And right before the election. The problem is,
this is the
if he were to be reelected,
candidate.
That 15% will probably shrink
to
5%.
That's a pretty dangerous precedent, though, if you say that whatever Donald Trump says is what Hoosiers want by definition.
The majority of Hoosiers are pro-life. The majority of Hoosiers do want to
actually,
see
that's not true.
I think it's all in how you phrase
it. I have seen recent polling that says the majority of Hoosiers want to see Kavanaugh confirmed and are pro-life.
Moving on.
Majority of Republicans do.
Secretary of State Connie Lawson and Attorney General Curtis Hill clashed this week over a court case involving Marion County early voting sites. Voter advocacy groups filed a lawsuit last year over a lack of early voting satellite sites in Marion County. That lawsuit seemed to reach its resolution when federal judge Sarah Evans Barker approved an agreement to set up 6 early voting locations. But now Attorney General Curtis Hill wants to put that on hold. He says the agreement reached by the Marion County Election Board violates state law. Secretary of State Connie Lawson isn't happy. She calls Hill's action reckless and says he's disrupted months of bipartisan conversations. Hill hit back, calling Lawson's statement, quote, ill-informed. Nikki Kelly, is this a further deterioration of the relationship between Curtis Hill and the leadership of his party and of this state?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, we would not have seen 2 Republican statewide office holders disparaging each other publicly 2 months ago. It wouldn't have happened. But, you know, all of this scandal and the groping allegations and Lawson calling for his resignation clearly is affecting his office and their ability to do their job. And, you know, we're going to see more of this as this case continues on with no resolution.
This is a case that Republicans and Democrats in Marion County finally got together and said, hey, we've got a plan going forward. This is what we're going to do. And a judge signed off on it. Why do you think Curtis Hill is so eager to knock that down?
Well, his stated reason, of course, is basically the notion of states' rights, that this is that this supersedes or undercuts, I should say, this agreement that would be signed off on by the federal judge in this question, by Judge Barker, undercuts the sovereignty, if you will, of Indiana to make decisions about its polling and its voting. However, we've seen any number of precedents over the past 200 plus years where, when there are egregious challenges to people's rights to vote and their ability to exercise that right, that the federal courts have intervened. So, I mean, it's not as if this is without precedent. And you really don't want to pick a fight with a federal judge. I think that
particularly
I don't know how he did
judge.
In law school. I'm sure he did got straight A's, but I think that's one of the first things you probably learn in your first freshman or first year.
This
of law
is
school.
The. We talked about this last week on the show. I thought it was going to be the last time we talked about Curtis Hill for a little while. Obviously, I was wrong. But I said, in part, you know, nothing on that issue is going to happen for a little while. Well, is this sort of thing going to keep happening until there's some sort of resolution with the groping allegations?
Well, it's starting to feel like that. I mean, if you're being rebuked by Connie Lawson, like, you're really on the wrong path. and in this case, it's incredibly frustrating and unheard of that you would intervene or meddle in something when you have your county party chairman who's been working with the other party for months and their representatives on a contentious issue that we've debated for 10 years and a lot of time and effort has gone into this to come to an agreement, and to come in and blindside a county party chairman, the state party leaders, the Secretary of State is outrageous. And like, I'm really surprised by it. And if some of the things he claims to care about are true, and I mean, there's a case for some of that, he should have been involved in that a long time ago.
Is this Curtis Hill placating or playing to his base?
Well, this is Curtis Hill trying to restrict voting, which is consistent with his attitude all the way along the line. The idea that you'd have an African-American attorney general trying to restrict black voters is kind of shows a little bit about how out of touch Curtis Hill is. I don't know whether he thought this would deflect attention from his problems or not, but what you're having in the media is a recitation of all of his problems in conjunction with this. And I'd like to see Fisher make the argument to the Seventh Circuit that the federal judge in this case had no ability to do what she did. Lots of luck on that one.
The race for Indiana's 3rd District congressional seat took a turn for the negative this week when Congressman Jim Banks hit out at Democratic challenger Courtney Tritch. Tritch, a political and economic development consultant from Fort Wayne, has pushed Banks to engage in 6 debates this election season. She recently amended that request to 4, but pushed Banks to finalize dates by next week. Banks previously said he looked forward to debating his challenger, and his spokesperson reiterated that in the campaign's response this week to Tritch's push. But the campaign statement also said, quote, "Unlike Ms. Tritch, Congressman Banks has a family and a job." Tritch sharply criticized Banks, saying, quote, "His comments make it perfectly clear where he stands on women's equality and women's rights." Jennifer Hollowell, what the heck?
Well, look, Congressman Banks was elected with 70% of the vote 2 years ago. He's very popular. He's very active in the district. And he has a really strong voting record. Frankly, when you are in such a safe seat, a lot of folks don't even debate. The fact that they were in good faith efforts, negotiations for a debate, frankly, is uncommon. And so I think that that is something that's important to note. What happened is his opponent wanted to press the issue, wanted an answer faster, even though she knew they had already been committing to do debates later, and then she blew this totally out of proportion. And I frankly think it's just an example of using the new Democrat tactic of like creating outrage to try to bring attention to your campaign, and this is the only thing so far that's brought any attention to our campaign.
Was this creating outrage where
not the only thing that was outrageous was his comment. I mean, it demeans women is what it does. I mean, she doesn't have the job.
It has nothing to do with
being a woman. I don't care what his percentage is, okay? And I don't care how safe that district is. It doesn't excuse bad conduct. And if he's going to debate, which he should debate, whatever his margin is, he should debate. And he needs to do that, and he needs not to be demeaning to a woman who's his opposition.
It has nothing to do with her being
Somebody described this as punching down unnecessarily. Is that kind of what this was? I mean, why even play into this? I mean, yes, she was pushing him, but
I clearly think he could have chosen his words a little more carefully. And but he, at the same time, feels like it's being mischaracterized and kind of spun up to get attention, which she is getting. But, you know, he should debate. And I think he was trying to say, look, we'll do it when it's closer to the election, yeah. But that's just not how
it came out. Finally, the RV that Joe Donnelly used for his campaign trips broke down this week during a 7-day tour across the state. Donnelly used the RV in his first ad of the campaign, noting he drives it himself much of the time. And the campaign used its breakdown in a recent fundraising pitch, asking supporters to contribute to RV repair. And Delaney, as fun as this was, is a broken-down RV the imagery that Joe Donnelly needs right now?
You know, it shows that he's an everyday person. He's not a multimillionaire like Mike Braun. And he's going back and forth across the state campaigning, and it's to his credit. And frankly, raising money off the broken-down RV was pretty ingenious, I thought.
Does that help rescue this imagery a little for Joe Donnelly?
I don't think so. I really don't. I truly hope that he does not actually drive it himself. I think it's a horrible idea.
But
this cartoon kind of draws it.
All right, that's Indiana Week in Review for this week. Our panel is Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Jennifer Hollowell, John Schwannis of Indiana Lawmakers, and Nikki Kelly of the Fort Wayne Journal-Gazette. If you'd like a podcast of this program, you can find it at wfyi.org/IWIR, or starting Monday, you can stream it or get it on demand from Xfinity and on the new WFYI app. I'm Brandon Smith of Indiana Public Broadcasting. Join us next time, because a lot can happen in an Indiana week.
Ice Miller is proud to support Indiana Week in Review. Ice Miller, with a 100-year tradition of learning what is important to clients and strategizing with them toward a common goal. Today, Ice Miller continues its commitment to help clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com.